Welcome to Cultivate the Ordinary Podcast, curious conversations for the anxious, frustrated, and bored. I'm Travis.
And I'm Jesse. So often we're held captive by screens, schedules, and media that's mind-numbing and polarizing. This leaves us seeing dimly through a fog. We want to spark more imagination and a better awareness of God's presence in the everyday.
Join us on a fun journey of discovery and curiosity as we look at the ordinary through the lenses of joy, wonder, beauty, and hope.
Now to Him who is able to do immeasurably more than we could ask, according to His great power.
All right, welcome to the podcast today. Really happy to have our friend Serena Salmons on. The themes we're going to kind of stay with are joy, contentment, and worship. We're going to kind of bounce around those topics. And Jesse's going to introduce Serena more, but I just have to say, as a friend and someone I haven't seen actually for a few years, but is Serena someone to me that, in the words of Walt Whitman, he says, some people are so much sunshine to the square inch. And I'm putting some SPF 30 on right now, just being in the studio here together, because, I mean, there's some sunshine and rays of joy coming out. So you'll definitely hear that. But yeah, so that's what we're going to talk about. Also, I can relate well to, I think you're from a small Kansas town.
Yeah,
right?
From the okay. Midwest.
That's right. And how many times have you gotten the, we're not in Kansas anymore? Through, like, is that the line? Whenever you say that, is it like, like every other time you meet someone and you say you're from Kansas?
Yep. It's the, you got, where's your Toto? Toto's not around. Or let's click our heels. There's no place like home. I get that frequently, but I'm here for it. It's good.
I love how the Wizard of Oz has stayed relevant for like 80 years because of that line.
That's right.
Yep.
Well, we are so thankful that you agreed to come on with us today, and you're just such a special friend to us, and we go back, what is it? Is it 10 years now?
Almost
10 years. Meeting in Clinton, South Carolina.
Little Clinton, who would have ever thought?
And we amazingly just bonded over the topic of gut health.
That's right. It's important, y'all.
Yeah, no, just conversations around health and hormones and nutrition.
That's right.
We spent hours walking, coffee.
Yeah.
So
that was you too.
I was
not part of that. Just so
the
we're...
start of our friendship. But yeah, Serena has been in and out of our lives for 10 years. When we do get together, we just pick right back up. And later, I guess, what year was it you came to start caring for Travis's brother Jeremy on the team?
Yeah, I want to say it was up until 2020, so right 2018 to 2020.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Did
I say that right?
I think we're in the ballpark. I mean, I'm terrible with, I barely know how old I am, so
we'll ask Jeremy. He'll correct us.
No, that was right. 2008 to about 2020.
Yeah. And that was just such a sweet time having you so close and seeing you so frequently. But Travis and I both really see you as just such an intentional wife, mother, caregiver, and leader of people, women specifically too. But, you know, when we were thinking about the topic of joy and thought about, there's lots of people that come to mind, but you're at the top of someone who emulates what it looks like to have joy in all circumstances. So,
well, you guys are so kind. I don't deserve those words, but thank you so much. Yeah, it's been, life is so fun and it's so exciting, and bad things happen sometimes, but that's the beauty of it. I just picture life as like a book, right? You have the high chapters and you have the low chapters, but that's what makes a book exciting. And so that's why I love life.
Yeah, that's so true. And it reminds me of Frederick Buechner's line of, you know, basically, this is the world, beautiful and terrible things will happen. Do not be afraid. And so I think that captures the shadows and the light of life.
Yeah, absolutely. Totally captures just who Serena is as a person. Is there anything else you want to share just about your life, your family?
Yeah, I would love to. I got married to my high school sweetheart. We have been together since we were in middle school, and we got married. I was 20, he was 21, and we're still together. We're about to celebrate 10 years of marriage, all to the glory and grace of God. So that's so exciting, and we have three beautiful children together. We just recently adopted in December. We got that finalized. So we have our son. His name's Ellington Nikeem. We have a almost four-year-old daughter named Isla Joy. And then we have another daughter. Her name is Emerson. We call her Mercy. And Emerson Christine. So life has been so crazy and so beautiful. And I'm loving it. It's been so fabulous. I just wanted to touch on just doing life together with one another. I just wanted to take this second and just thank you guys, because you guys have been a catalyst in me and my husband's walk with Jesus. You were really the first example that we had of what it looks like to truly live out the gospel, not just on a Sunday morning, but you've shared how you view me. I view you as you guys run to the mess. You see somebody who is hurting, you see somebody who just needs Jesus, and you run to it. And to me, that is exactly what I want my life to encompass. And so I just want to thank you. Like, thank you for letting Jesus work through y'all to just encourage one another. I remember we had one particular woman in our group, and she was just going through a really, really hard time. And to the world standard, people would have given up on her. I thought that many times. It's like, you know, she's struggling almost like she's a lost cause. And I'm shameful for that, for how I know Jesus to be now. But back then I'm like, man, they are spending so much time and effort and love into this person who's not reciprocating it and who is just really struggling. And that was a beautiful example of the gospel. And me and my husband have been completely marked by that. And through that example, that's exactly our ministry now, is running to the mess. So just thank you guys for being the catalyst into that. And yeah.
Oh, you're making me cry. yeah, it was a very, very sweet, sweet time. What were the years, 2016, 2017, that we all just got to do life together, weekly, weekends, you know, meals, lots of shared experiences.
Yeah.
Of messiness, for sure.
Yeah.
And we are a mess.
Me too, girl.
Yeah. Well, that's just crazy kind words. And thank you so much for saying that. And that means a lot. And it's hard to think, looking in the mirror, that I was in some way a catalyst. But as you said, Jesus through us. Yeah, fun to kind of look back at life, but now we're gonna kind of get more into kind of your experience in life, your story, both in the past and then kind of just the way you see life and suffering and hope and all of that stuff now. So let's go back in time, and one of the big markers of your life was that you suffered a traumatic brain injury in a car accident, and so can you take us back into that time of your life and kind of just what you went through in that whole thing?
Yeah. I was a junior in high school, and I was on my way home. I was running late. I had a curfew and I missed it. And so I was driving probably 80 miles per hour in the Midwest. It was 17 degrees, and I overcorrected and I rolled my vehicle. I got ejected out of the passenger side window, and I experienced several different injuries. I had a TBI, traumatic brain injury. I broke my C6, my C7, and my C1, which are on my vertebrae and on my spine. I broke my cheekbone. I shattered my pelvis, and I broke 7 ribs. And God sent somebody to save me. There's no denying the story. They got delayed like several hours, and it was only by the grace of God that this couple found me at the exact right time that I needed, and they saved my life through Jesus, and they were very attuned to the Holy Spirit, and so I know that it was Jesus sent them to save me. So I listened to the episode with Dan, and he's fantastic, and it was eerie how similar our stories were. So if you wanted to know a little bit more about that, I would recommend that you guys go back and listen to that episode, because his thoughts and his experience was so similar to mine. I was like, this is crazy. Are you in my head? But yeah, just clinging to Jesus when you have nothing else. And that's kind of been my whole life. Just like, God has brought me in a desperate situation, but it's not a sad thing. There's a difference between wanting Jesus and then being desperate for him. And so there's that verse in James that talks about count it all joy when you go through trials and tribulations. And I truly believe that that's true, 100%.
Mm. Wow, I can't imagine being 16 and in high school and having to go through an experience that's that traumatic. Do you remember, were you a believer before this happened, or did that come later?
Yeah, I truly believe I got saved at the age of 4. I saw an Easter play, and I got to physically see what Jesus did for me, and that changed my life, and I accepted Jesus there. But growing up, my parents got a divorce, and that just shocked me, and it rocked my world. And so I decided, like, I'm just going to live for me. And so I knew I was sinning, and I knew the life I was living was not pleasing to the Lord. And so my testimony is I was drinking alcohol at a young age. I was living for the weekend, and I was just not living my life for Jesus. And so I count this car accident as a beautiful reminder. He saved me, and he gave me a second chance. So after my car accident, and when death is tangibly in your face, and you really had to think, like, if I would have died that night, would I have gone to heaven? At the end of the day, I think I would have. However, I realized I was not living the life that I wanted to. And so after the car accident, I started devoting my life to Jesus. And so though it was hard, it was a beautiful reminder of the person I want to be. And God used so much of that story to just bring glory to him. And so I wouldn't change a single thing about it.
Yeah. Yeah, I picture you in this slow recovery phase that I'm sure it was maybe over a year before you were even somewhat able to physically function normally again. But that physical reminder of your dependence on others, on the Lord, taking it day by day, and just this recovery being long. What was your experience of the presence of God in that type of suffering?
Yeah, he has been so good to me. I mean, I remember I couldn't even move in my bed. My mom would have to put a towel under me because of my shattered pelvis and my rib. She would have to pull the towel to just adjust me in bed so I wouldn't get bed sores, and wearing the neck brace and just being in a wheelchair all throughout high school trying to keep up so I could graduate. It was an intense time. But all the while this was going on, I felt joy. I felt happiness. I just knew, like, God had saved my life. Here I am. I have a second chance. And I didn't deserve it, and I knew I didn't. But I just wanted to live my life to the fullest after that. So I got baptized at the age of 18, and that was just a catalyst. And through my car accident, that is what brought my husband and I, like, through knowing that he could have lost me that night, that's when our relationship really turned, and he asked me to marry him when I was 19, and we dedicated our marriage to God, and we made many, many mistakes, but we just knew this was the life that we want for each other and for our children and for life. So it was a really beautiful thing.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. So if you were to distill that impact on your life and, like, how God used this accident, what's one truth or lesson or message that you pulled from your traumatic brain injury and what, how God used it, that you carry with you and that you share with others?
There's that verse that said, God will give you peace that surpasses all understanding. And when I look back on all these seasons of life and people tell me how hard that must have been, and on paper, maybe it looks like that, but when I relive that season of my life, I'm like, it really wasn't that bad. I just wanted the presence of God, and he showed up for me when I was desperate and on my knees. Every single time God was there, he would just point me to the exact verse that I needed in that day, or he would put on the song that was perfect, or my friends would text me at the exact right time. Like, mm-hmm. I never felt alone during that time. While during the recovery, it was a very lonely season, and dealing with, you know, different therapies and just trying to, you know, and with a traumatic brain injury, schoolwork at that point was really hard. But God sent the perfect teachers, and he gave everybody around me grace and just patience. And I graduated just along with the rest of my class, even though through that setback, and was able to attend college. And so if I was taking away anything from that experience, it's like God is right next to us. He is in the despair mm-hmm. with us. I think he cries when we cry. He's mm-hmm. just a loving father, mm-hmm. even in despair.
Amen.
Yeah, well said. And yeah, I think that there's this mystery of a profound mystery that Christ actually, when we lean into our suffering and not just try to, and it's not wrong to want to escape it. We're all human. We want to, you know, find ways to be distracted out of that or whatever. But I think
relief,
right. But when we lean in, Henry Nouwen talks about suffering a lot. He talks about when we lean into our grief and our pain, we actually find the grace of God. And so our worst fear, somehow God is in the middle of even that. So fast forwarding now a little bit into, and this is where the providential power of God then shows up in intersecting stories. But so you and your husband, Dylan, then he comes down to play college football down in South Carolina.
That's right.
That was your journey together down here.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So this is several years later. I mean, he would have graduated, you know, in his career and all that. And then you, I guess our lives intersect, kind of how we talked about at the beginning. And then through twists and turns and different things, you then come on as a caregiver for my brother, Jeremy,
yeah.
who we've shared in previous episodes with his traumatic brain injury. And that is pretty unbelievable too, to look back and go, okay, this girl from Kansas takes a meandering route to South Carolina. And then, you know, here also shares that in common in a car wreck too, as well. So in that recovery process. So, you know, we're not going to get too much into the Jeremy and the story since we have previously, but one thing I want to say about this is that's a little cool tidbit from looking at it, and then share anything else you want to say around it. Jeremy is able to, as we've said before, communicate by moving his, it was his left foot, but he's kind of switched that more to his left arm. And we spell the alphabet with that, either just by literally going through each letter, or he uses this technology, the Toby device, which is unbelievable. He activates a switch with that elbow. And I think if I'm remembering this right, he had some motivation issues around not really wanting to use that thing. And I get it. I think part of it's like, hey, you guys all want me to use this? He has so little control in his life. It's like, no, I'm going to make you spell just as slow as it takes me. And I get that, you know, and so no one can fault that. But I think you, again, your energetic passion, energy, like you come in and I think, weren't you the one that kind of motivated him to use that thing?
I would love to take credit, but I don't, it was a combination. Me and Sarah Kite, she really was fantastic. Yeah, I can relate to Jeremy in many ways, because after my car accident, it wasn't until 5 years later. So you think you're out of the woods, right? You think that things are healed and you're good and you're, you know, things are looking great. 5 years later, I suffered seizures and I didn't know what was going on. They were absent seizures. I was really struggling in my job because I was blanking out and I had no idea what was going on. So that was for a while, and then I started having convulsive seizures, and so that's when my life got, that was one of the hardest seasons of my life. And when those things started happening and the effects of my brain injury came to fruition, my personality started to change a bit. I was feeling a little bit of anger. I would get irritated out of the blue. It was just like I had to relearn who I was 5 years later. And that was really hard. I mean, I was basically a newlywed. I had just moved across the country. So I was trying to learn, you know, different. There was so much to learn all the while. My personality was changing. And so my relationship with Jeremy was special in that way, because when he was having a hard day and he was acting out of irritation, I'm like, Jeremy, I hear you. I understand. I know that's not who you are. And so here I am, able to just understand and also give grace, because I know exactly what you're going through. So the Toby was a beautiful, like, just to watch him learn new things, I think, once he started to realize, okay, yes, I can do this, I am capable, just watching his expression. And we had so many wonderful conversations that way. And I got to really see the heart of who Jeremy is through that device. So it was beautiful. I mean, I'd sit in the sunroom and we would talk for 4 hours. I mean, he has a memory like a hawk. I mean, he can, he told me so many funny stories about you, Travis. No, I won't share on here, but
that's probably.
Yeah. And he just got to share his heart, and he shared some things that he was currently struggling with and things that he struggled with as, you know, before the accident. And so it was, that was a beautiful season in my life with Jeremy for sure.
Very cool. Yeah, it was, no doubt. And you added so much to his life, and just like out of your shared experience and heart, that was profound.
Yeah, I really see your personality on display here in so many ways. Like you mentioned, you had to relearn your personality, but what's unique about what you were going through is the seizures and those experiences put a certain type of stress on you that you were kind of disintegrating in some ways because of stress, right? So personality does change when that happens. And, you know, but naturally you tend towards positivity and, you know, joy and abundance and enthusiasm and encouraging of others and things like that. You know, and I saw all those gifts on display in your care for Jeremy. And it was just an honor to watch you just add to his life. And it was at the right time. It was just these selected, year and a half, 2 years that were set apart for you to be there to fill that role. You did weekend care. But yeah.
It was a beautiful time for me. I mean, if you think you have it bad, just come and spend an hour with Jeremy and your life will be changed. It was a beautiful gift from the Father. It's like, Serena, I see you. I love you. I know what you're going through is hard. But just look at Jeremy. If he can find joy in being trapped in his own body, like, you can find joy in this season. You can find joy, although it is hard. So thank you for saying those wonderful things. But really, the pleasure is all mine, because it has impacted my life forever.
Yeah. So let's fast forward just a little bit. And I think it was during that time you started a journey of foster care, and which later led to adoption. Do you want to tell us a little bit about meeting your son and the journey and some of the even challenges with that whole process?
Yeah. So we the first really big instance in our life, we have had 9 children in our home on a long-term basis. We had a sibling set of 3, and everybody around us told us, hey, would you be their adoptive resource? And so my husband and I were so thrilled. We're like, absolutely. We fell in love with these 3 children, and we really thought that's what God was calling us to. And then we had a court date, and the judge sent these children home after they had been in our home for over a year and a half. She sent them home with no transition time. Like, it took us completely. We were blindsided. And not only were we blindsided, we were completely heartbroken, because we thought, like, that was our forever. And so that was really confusing to us. And I had just found out I was pregnant with our daughter, my first pregnancy. Thank you, Jesus. But it was just so many emotions and so much confusion. So here we are again in this position, just desperate for God, where are you? Like, we truly thought this was your plan for our life, and now it's not. And we will accept that, and we will trust you. No matter what you bring us to, we trust you, but this is painful. So that was kind of our first experience of loss. But it wasn't, but 3 months later, we got a phone call and they said, hey, would you take a newborn baby? And we weren't even licensed for newborns, because we know that they are easily placed, and that's beautiful. And that just wasn't necessarily our ministry at that time. But I was 6 months pregnant, and I said, hey, I have a crib. I have newborn diapers. Like, bring them on. We'd love to. And they said, hey, you will have them for 2 weeks. We have a plan in place. And so 2 weeks came, and they're like, okay, give us 2 months. That kind of fell through, but we have other things in the work. So, okay, 2 months came and gone, and 4 years later, we just finalized adoption with our son, and we've always had such a beautiful bond, and so God really redeemed the loss of those three. While we will forever mourn that and love them, and they will be very deep in our hearts, God gave us another gift, and we are just so grateful for Nikeem's life. He has, speaking of joy, like from the time he was able to have any expression, he just lights up a room. He's full of joy. He laughs like you've never heard. I mean, we do not deserve this kid. He is fantastic, and we are just so honored and blessed. But again, God is just writing this intricate story in our lives, and while we are walking through the valleys, God has the mountaintop just right around the corner. That's always how he's worked, and we trust that his plan is so much better than our own.
Yeah, I love how the story that we think sometimes is going to be our future, it just changes, and you have to adapt and trust, you said. But that's not always easy. Like, you know, we've painted this picture of just joy and positivity and things like that, and you're human, right?
Oh, yeah.
You are absolutely go through the same emotions that we all do, even though you tend towards positivity and looking at God's faithfulness. There's dark days. You have these experiences of suffering and waiting and uncertainty. And so, you know, what does that look like? For instance, through your adoption process, you know, you face challenges of uncertainty with court processes.
Sure.
You want to tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, foster care is hard in the way of, like, you don't have an ability to plan your life. Like, you don't have any control. And so that is difficult. You know, you're planning a family vacation 6 months down the road, and you don't know how many tickets to buy because you just don't know how many kids you're going to have in your home. You don't know if you buy 7 tickets, maybe 2 children will go home in that, and then you're left with 2 extra tickets. It's just it's just so many uncertainties. And foster care was interesting. And so all throughout our journey having him, we had family members come forward. And so he was 2.5. And so granted, at this point, I had had my first biological, my belly baby is how we describe it. And we raised them as twins. They are 4 months apart. They don't know a life without one another. My daughter has never once not gone a day without seeing her brother Nikeem. She never has. I basically raised twins. And so our bond was maybe even deeper because of that. And so when Nikeem was 2.5, he had a lovely aunt come forward. She was a director of a daycare. I mean, she was solid. But he had been in my life now for 2.5 years. And so I was just asking God, like, okay, is this it? Is this another child that you're going to take? It was just so, it was not all rainbows and joy. It was really hard to just say, okay, God, I trust you, but please don't take this baby from me. I trust you. They had many interactions, and we thought, like, this is it. He's going to go to be with family. And obviously that is a beautiful thing. And, like, that's the point of foster care. So don't misunderstand me, but I was so emotionally invested. He was my family. Like, he was my first son. He was my first baby. And so that was a really difficult highs and lows to walk through.
Well, we're all definitely experienced in the space of foster care and adoption, and that's the heartbeat of our passion together, all of us here. I love what you said, too, of, you know, just that is the uncertainty of foster care. And it's interesting to hear you then as a foster parent, former foster parent, saying that. Because then, of course, the kid who's in foster care, that's kind of one of the things I talk about when I describe foster care from the standpoint of a child, is that one of the most brutal realities is that you're living suspended in an uncertain outcome. Kids that, if they even can understand what's happening, is I don't know if I'm actually going home to bio parents because I don't know if they're going to get what they need to do together for the court. So my grief is suspended because I can't grieve what I haven't lost. My hope, I'm kind of self-protective of that because I don't know what I can hope for. Because if I, you know, and I don't, am I going to go to another foster home? Am I going home? Am I? And so it's interesting how then as you, so that's at the epicenter, uncertainty, that brutal reality. And then you as a foster parent are experiencing that same thing. I mean, to a lesser, I mean, it's still significant, but not to the level of what their heart's got to be experiencing in that. But still that crazy, like, I just don't know what's going to happen. How do we plan? How do we, you know, so you have to be really resilient. Another key moment in your life, you and Dylan, was just facing enormous adversity and grief through the loss of a baby. So do you want to tell us more about that and some unpack some of that?
Yeah, I was raising Isla and Nikeem as twins, and they were a little over a year at this point, and I got pregnant, and we were thrilled. I can't describe it. When I first got pregnant with Isla, there were so many mixed emotions, like, how is this going to go? You know, first-time parents and just fears. But the second time, I was overjoyed. I was so proud. I was so excited. So at 20 weeks, we went for our anatomy scan, and they told us that she has something called Turner syndrome, which turned into high drops. So basically, I mean, it was a death sentence. And I said that in the doctor's office, and they said yes. So they asked us if we wanted to medically abort, and we said that is not an option for us. But what this meant for us is she's terminally sick. She's basically drowning. And so it's a matter of time. So I carried this baby for 5 weeks. I had the honor of carrying her for 25 weeks. But from that anatomy scan, I had no clue how long I was going to carry her. So that was the darkest time of my life. I was waking up every morning and I was asking God, okay, is this my last day with her? And that was my lowest point for sure. And I could not escape that type of grief. I had never experienced a close death, so this was all just so foreign to me. And that was a pivotal point in my faith. Like, I just had no clue how I was going to get through those days. Every day, just waking up and saying, okay, is this the last? So that was extremely difficult. But I got to carry her for 5 more weeks after the diagnosis. And I went in for another ultrasound, and they said, okay, we can't find a heartbeat. So it was like my reality was here. I could not run, and I had to just face this head on. And so I got induced, and I had her the next day. And that was a dark time for sure. It was so similar to the story in 2 Samuel 12, where David and Bathsheba had their baby. And, they got the same diagnosis that the baby was going to die. And David was just on his hands and knees, and he mourned that so bad. He would not eat. He was wearing sackcloth. He would not get off the floor. He slept on the floor for days. And finally, when the child died, they were so scared to tell David because he was so desperate for the presence of God that they were scared. Like, okay, once the child actually dies, like, he might go to extreme. He might lose it. And that was exactly how I felt. I begged God, God, can I just please touch your robe? Like, I'll do anything. Please just heal this baby. I just want to touch the hem of your garment. And I know you can heal her. I know you can do this, God. I'm asking for a miracle. And God chose not to do that. And there's no, just like David, the very next day, I knew I had to be in the presence of the Lord. So I had her on a Saturday, and we went to church the next Sunday, and or that next day, which was a Sunday. And I had no idea that there was correlated, but I read the story again later on. And David did the exact same thing. He got up and he went into the house of the Lord and he worshiped. And that's exactly how I was able to get through those 5 weeks. And I mean, the whole 25 weeks and years to come. I mean, the 3-year anniversary is coming up this month, actually. And it's not something that you can run from, and it's those feelings are there. And that was definitely the darkest point of my life through all the struggles. That was definitely the hardest one for me. But I got to hold her in my hands, and I got to just see, like, even though she was not perfect in the sight of humans or here on earth, like, I just knew that God had intricately woven her together in my womb, and I got to just see her and hold her and love her for about a day. So that was a beautiful blessing, but that was a dark time.
Wow. Yeah, you're really speaking to the hearts of women everywhere that have lost a baby. You know, I myself have suffered a miscarriage, and I did actually was able to hold my baby too. Mm-hmm. And that, although each experience of that type of grief is so unique to the woman and that family, you know, I hear your worship was such a resource for you. A lot of times with clients and just people that I serve, you know, we talk about when we're going through this dysregulation, going through grief and pain, and what are the things that make you feel at home, that make you feel like you can come back to yourself a little bit. Yeah. And I know that you lead worship at your church, and that is something you go to often. You know, in this desperate just time that you couldn't run, you couldn't get away from the pain of your baby. She was part of you. Mm-hmm. And that loss is not a quick recovery. We've talked in the past, you know, you're an Enneagram 7, right?
Yeah.
So for those of you out there that just don't know, that's the enthusiast, you know, the hopeful, joyful person that, you know, reframes many things to just positive outlook. And that's such a gift in so many ways. But the other side of that is going through suffering. It's a lot further fall to the depths from that place of joy and hope. And so when it happens hard sometimes, and often people don't know how hard it is on you because you're such a positive person. Do you have any, like, just what was it like for those around you watching you walk through this?
I was so blessed by just having the best community. I just remember that people were so gracious. And if you know anybody who's currently walking through a hard season, no matter what that looks like, I remember people would just text me, and I was in such a dark place that I could not even respond. I didn't know how to respond. But they were just continually, like, checking in on me on a Monday, and then again next Friday. And they were just consistent. And even though I didn't text them back, they were just consistent, and they just loved me. And it just made me see, like, okay, they see me. I didn't walk through this grief really with many people. I was very private in that. But people were just fantastic. People knew my love for the Lord and for worship. So they were constantly just sending me encouraging songs. And there was one particular that on the days I just could not understand. I wouldn't ever say I was angry with God. I was never angry. I was just confused. Like, here I am again, feeling like I'm still up in the air with our adoption. I have no clue what's going to come from that. And here I am losing a biological baby. I just felt almost, I'm just being honest, like a little bit like I was being punished. And I was just asking God, like, what are you up to? I know you have a greater plan for my life, but I just can't see it right now. But people were sending me these songs that were just lifting me up and encouraging me. And there's one particular that says, "Oh, I know my God did not fail. He has not been surprised. He knows exactly what's happening. My God did not fail." And so I hung on to those words and said, "This is not for none. Like, God is in here with me." And it was dark, but I just knew somehow, some way, he was going to bring this for his glory. And boy, did he.
So tell us, how did God show up?
So I got pregnant again, and I knew the very next day. And I texted my friend and I said, I think I got pregnant last night, which sounds crazy. But she said, you know, you got pregnant with Elodie in October. I said, that's crazy. And unbeknownst to me, sure enough, my next baby was born on Elodie's due date. We had our, I guess, third baby. Her name is Emerson, and we spell it E-M-E-R-C-Y-N. If you look at the middle of that word, it spells the name Mercy. And we just truly felt like she is just the mercy of Christ, just like David. He went back to his wife, and they bore a son, Solomon. Like, we are living in this parallel with David here now in present time. And so we gave birth to our daughter on Elodie's due date, which was just unreal. And wow. Only God can write that intricate, beautiful story.
Right. So that's beautiful. That is so powerful. Mm. The redemption spelled out loud right there. Mm-hmm. Thank you for sharing that story and taking us through these stories that are very sacred and vulnerable. And let's go back to one thing. So I know you were kind of talking about, so as an Enneagram 7 or someone who's just very much wired to see the world through an enthusiastic lens and optimism, one of your greatest strengths is people that will follow you and follow Serena, seeing like, okay, she sees something that maybe I don't see. She sees more hopefully, these types of things. You're very inspiring. Sevens, you know, can really be the life of the party in ways. But the part of, though, about, would you say that your friends and the community around you that was there for you and helping you, would they have, looking back, really seen the level that you were suffering, or in an honest way that you...
Yeah, that's a really good question that I don't necessarily know the answer to, if I'm being honest. I want to say, like, yes, I invited them in and they saw my deep despair, but I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. Being a worship leader, I would, you know, be on stage every Sunday. And I did share, you know, people had a clue. People knew what was going on. But did I ever show the emotional side, like, you know, at night when I was by myself and I was breaking down and just like in complete anguish? I don't necessarily think people saw that side of me. I think I also, as a ministry, like in being a leader in church, people are looking to you through these examples, and I wanted to glorify God in all things. So I think I was overly optimistic, maybe, and just making sure that people just knew that there was hope amongst, you know, anguish. And so that's a great question. I would love to ask the people that were there in that season. I don't really have an answer.
Well, I can imagine, though, with what you just described, that feeling that responsibility to give the hope to others, that what you were then holding and grieving, that at times you did probably feel very lonely, you know, even though you had an incredible community that was, they were ready to serve you. But sometimes we get in our own way to not
for sure
receive all of what's available, you know, from others, from God, even from ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was my first experience of loss. Like I said, I have... The first time it was so personal to me. So I was just like in this place trying to figure out, how do you mourn? Because I never had before. Mm. How do I mourn this? What does that look like? And in my quiet moments where I was in my hardest struggles, I specifically remember I was running from those feelings. I wanted to suppress them. I wanted to shove them deep down. And I remember God almost like verbally saying, feel it. Be sad. It is okay. If you don't feel this now, you will have to continue to feel this later. Like, just grieve. You have the right to grieve.
Yes, absolutely. I love that audible voice, that the compassionate witness that God is to us, that says, I'm here, I'm listening, I'm watching you, I'm holding you as you walk through this pain. I am with you in the, like, the tomb, Mm-hmm. We just released a newsletter about the paradox of light and darkness, mm-hmm. and that willingness to go into the dark places, not that you're consumed by them, but that going there means you can move through. You have to go from Friday to Sunday. Mm-hmm. You can't just jump to Sunday, right. The resurrection, right. You know, the hope. It's important.
Well, and there's so much this is a whole nother podcast episode of unpacking like grief and loss and just sharing so honestly here. and now I got to take a swig of coffee. I'm losing my voice.
Okay.
That sounded like a cow drinking out of a livestock tank. But one of the things that, too, it just made me think, and we don't have to really talk much about this, but I do feel like part of what you're getting at, just being honest, I'm with you. I share that, too, of like, and I think a lot of people can relate. This isn't just a Western American type of a thing. I just feel like culturally we don't know how to handle grief well. It's quick. It's, you have a funeral within a week and quickly get it on and move on. Whereas other cultures, it can be weeks, and there's this sense of you're just in the grief. And then I think as Christians, and then in your case as a leader, there's even as you're being honest about the pressure, I feel like there is a weight that we feel or we put on ourselves. It's a false weight too of that. But what would happen if I'm not radiating some sort of hope? If in those times more often, I'm just saying, I have no hope. I love Jesus. I'm not feeling God's presence right now, but this maybe fear that if I do and say those things, honestly, then someone's going to lose their faith or someone's going to lose their hope in God. And I think that's just an area where we all struggle, and that's a wrong area of struggle. I think we've lost that. I think there is something that, so I'm not trying to solve this, but yeah. that's just a thing where.
But I think what you're saying is you invite others to also have times where they're just being real and honest, like the Psalms are. The pattern of every Psalm, I think there's two that break this pattern, but of sort of complaint or lament. Mm-hmm. And then, you're pouring out your heart of just honest emotions to God. And then there's a reorienting that happens that you then know who He is. It's like, I'm remembering the truth and now I'm walking forward, And so that invitation for others of all the phases is so, so good. But let's take a second. Did you have something?
Mm. Okay. No, I'm listening.
Good job.
I'm a listener too on this podcast. Okay.
Talk just briefly about you as a worship leader, and more. You've mentioned what it was like going through the grief, but is there a song or a melody, some lyrics, something that you hung on to during those times that sort of restored your soul or quieted your soul?
Just song in general is just a great way for me to connect to Jesus and just pour out. It's almost easier because somebody else wrote it, but then you can relate to it and give mm-hmm. it back to God when you just don't have the words to say. So worship for me was a beautiful gift because I was able to just say, okay, God, I don't know what to pray in these moments. I don't know how to give that back. But that's my favorite thing about worship, is worship is one of the only gifts that we can give back to God. Mm. And so, yeah, just holding on to this hope and through melody and just continuing to worship through that is how I got through. And again, just people encouraging me through song was just fantastic. But moving on to my life now, contentment is something I have to fight for. I'm always on to the next. Mm-hmm. And just like that, I mean, I got pregnant right away. It was just like, that is my tendencies. And that's why foster care works so well in my life, because I'm like, okay, bring on the next. And that can be a beautiful thing, but that can be my biggest my biggest issue is I'm just always on to the next thing. But my life now, I have quit my job. I'm a stay-at-home mom, and that is the most beautiful thing. It is so beautiful, but I have to fight for contentment. I sometimes struggle with the thought of, okay, I'm not overseas sharing the gospel in a country where I could lose my life for it, so I'm not doing enough for Jesus. So I had to really work through that, and God reminded me that obedience is obedience, and it is beautiful. So I have not called you to that life. I have called you to stay at home with these three beautiful children I have given you. And that is just as meaningful to me as it is being overseas. Right. And so that has been something I've had to work towards and really fight for. And so worship for me then looks different than how it does now. Worship for me is, will I be content in this season? Will I find joy in the everyday life of staying home? Can I, even though my life looks completely different than I ever thought it would, can I worship God in the day-to-day? Mm-hmm. And what that looks like now is saying, thank you, Jesus, as I am doing a load of laundry, as I am folding little socks, giving that to Jesus and say, God, I know you've called me to this, and here I am, and I'm going to do it with a joyful heart. When I'm doing the dishes that I can't stand, thank you, Jesus, for this life. I want to honor you in all that I do. I want to do things without grumbling and complaining. I want to live my life for you. And that is an act of worship. So I have the beautiful opportunity and honor to lead worship with a congregation and who I love. But true acts of worship for me are in the moments where I feel in content. And just giving that to Jesus and say, God, I will glorify you even in these moments that seem small to me.
Yeah, I definitely resonate with that so much about the energy moving you forward into the next thing and like just this motivation, and you're just a very driven person. But this season of motherhood and this what you feel called to, it's like the action is slowing and quieting and savoring. How does the word savoring like land on you?
Oh, that's a difficult word for me, because I am just I am just an enthusiast. I need adrenaline. I need the thrill. I need the next. And so when I don't and when I don't have that, I tend to get fearful, if I'm being honest. If I don't have the next thing, I'm like, oh no. Like, I am not fulfilled. I have nothing to look forward to. I have no challenge. So that has been this season, this beautiful season of just, it's okay to slow down. It's okay to savor what God has given me. I am no less, now that I'm not running around with a chicken, like a chicken with my head cut off, I am no less than I, you know, now that I'm slowing down and just embracing this season and just giving back everything I can to God.
Yeah. No, that's well said. And for mothers out there, we all know like the guilt of not doing enough and not, you know, having our kids in all the activities and participating in all the Bible studies and like just it's so much that is available to us. And they are all good things. If we did some of them, it wouldn't be wrong. But sometimes we can do too much. And I know for many Enneagram 7s that the spiritual practice of stillness is very difficult, but it's the most needed. And it's scary, like you said, because then you're alone with your thoughts and your anxieties and things like that. But that is where the sweetness and the nearness of God comes to just you as an individual.
Yeah. It's almost like I have a tendency to be work-based. Like, God, you will love me enough if I do this for you. But that's not what at all he's saying. He said, just rest in my obedience and just do what I say now in this moment and don't worry about the rest. I have you. I've had you my entire life. I'm not going to stop now. That's exactly my entire testimony. That's just who he is. He is faithful.
I love that. It reminds me of Gregory Boyle's line when he says, about God, behold the one who cannot take his eyes off you. He's savoring us.
So Serena, I know I asked you earlier this morning, because I was picturing you in that savoring place, that the worship song that quiets your soul. And I said, is there a song that like comes to mind that you would share with us? And you said, what did you say to me?
I was shocked because I was curling my hair and God put this song on my heart. Is this the song that like hits the depths of my soul? Maybe not, but I love this because it is straight from scripture. So I know it will stand the test of time. So I'd love to share it with you.
Mm. Well, take us out with this little piece of worship.
Yes, this song is by Judah. It is called The Fullness of God, and it's based right off of Ephesians 3:20.
Now to him who is able to do immeasurably more than we could ask, according to him.